If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the HBO Boys, the podcast where we recap Pluribus while quietly accepting that the hive mind would have replaced us with happier versions by now. Today we're covering season one, episode three, entitled Grenade, an episode in which Carol asks for a grenade, receives her grenade, and is somehow surprised by the consequences of having a grenade. I'm Ryan, and Adam's also here.
Hey, Ryan.
Yes, sir.
I'd catch a grenade for you.
Wow, yeah, is that what you're referring to?
What was that?
Oh, it was the Bruno Mars grenade.
Yeah. And you remember that time that we did like a parody of it? It was about Call of Duty. Pretty cool. All right, I'm so psyched to talk about this episode.
Yeah, what a long lost treasure on the internet that I will not point out to anybody. And if you'd like to spelunk for it, then you are more than welcome. But come heck or high water, I shall not point you in said direction. So we're on episode three of the Pluribus, and first criticism I'm gonna lob over the fence here for the Pluribus.
Whoa. Okay,
the opening title slash theme music is weird and forgettable and borderline bad. I think
it's like, weird, it's, I don't forget it, but it is weird. Like I kind of like that it's like a bunch of dots kind of motioning into a direction and creating the word. Like I get what they're trying to do, but it's definitely not like anything earth shattering, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like I get what they're trying to do too, but we also live in an age where there are a lot of shows, some also on Apple TV, that have entrances that are straight up iconic. And
for sure,
I just don't see why you wouldn't take the opportunity. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the simplistic nature of it is very intentional.
I mean, I'm sure it is, but whatever, like, make it cool, or please.
I mean, fair. In a perfect world, Ryan, what would you have it be, and how long do you think it would go?
Okay, in a perfect world, it would be a minute to a minute 15 long. Obviously, you could jump it if you'd like, but I would like it so that it was so good I didn't want to jump it.
Sure.
And what would I make it? I mean,
do you think it'd be something akin to like The Last of Us, where it was like fungus spreading? Like it could be happiness spreading in some way?
Yeah, I don't think they would lean that much into it being a virus, unless that's exactly what their intention is.
Sure.
I think we'll talk actually a little bit at the end today as we dive further into theories, whether or not that's the aim of the showmakers and Mr. Gilligan, if they want us to be thinking about this like it's a virus or not. But come back to me on that. Let's circle back on that one, because there are people whose full-time jobs that they're paid very, very well to come up with intros for TV shows that are iconic. And you asked me to do it off the cuff. And if I, you know what? No, just like, I don't know, people falling down a waterfall.
Fair enough. Or like a waterfall, freezing. But of people. Or freezing and convulsing, you know?
Oh, okay. So you think that the intro should be a recreation of the mass genocide that occurred at the beginning of the show. That's bold.
Yeah, totally bold. At least it wouldn't have given away anything, you know?
Yeah, and just every week you're like, 800 million again, huh? Wow, that hurts. Crazy. Every time.
Or every time they do the intro, it becomes less and less because there's less and less people that could die, you know?
That's sad.
Anyway,
because they're already deceased. As we enter season three or two, I mean one, episode three, and we see Helen and Carol. They are arriving to a ice hotel years ago. And I really enjoyed this scene. Carol was acting the exact way I would in an ice hotel, which is, why did we come here? You totally made us do this. It's cold. And the bed is made of ice. Is everybody out of their gosh dang minds?
Yeah, I mean, reminded me very much of that time when we went to Barcelona, went to Ice Barcelona and got to drink in a room that looked exactly like this.
Right. And then what if you had to sleep there too?
I mean, there were like ice couches with fur like padding on them. So I could imagine. I was also in shorts, which wasn't a great choice, but you know, here we are.
Yeah, here you are. I mean, you were wearing shorts full time back then.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, you were an FT short. But I wouldn't want to sleep there at all. I just really liked this scene, though, because obviously Carol is worried about her book that just came online, how well it's selling, if she's on the New York Times bestseller list, where on that list specifically she is. And she is remembering this as a time where she was having a bad time, because she generally has bad times anywhere she goes. That's just sort of her vibe. But also remembering it fondly, because it was a moment with the woman that she loved who is now dead. So I don't know. I think the dichotomy of, wow, what a terrible mem. This is so cold. I hate it here. Why we have to sleep on the ice for 7 days? But I was doing it with the person that I love at the same time. So, you know, pros and cons.
Yeah. Yeah. And, it's funny you said, you know, this is what, 7 years ago you said? Seven years ago, it seemed like she genuinely liked what she was doing, where at the beginning of the season, we saw that she was like kind of tired of what she was doing. And so that was interesting to me that she like, I mean, as I assume all writers are, they love their craft until it becomes too much of a job, right? But I just liked that, like, she was actually excited about how she was performing, where now she's like, I don't give a shit. If you think, you know, peddling bullshit to people is fun.
Right. And then, yeah, we see her say that, and then the world goes to shit. So, like,
truly, not great.
It didn't matter to her before, and now it doesn't matter for, like, at all, but in reality. We then come back, and it is in the present once more. Carol is back on the plane, leaving the meetup with all the immune folks, or at least the ones that we know of. She went and got Zosia at the end of episode 2, so she's still with Carol. So while Carol is having a lot of moral slash what the fuck vibes based on the hive mind, at the very least, she was like, I am going to go get Pirate Lady, though. It's complicated for both her and the audience as to why she was like, I hate all of this and I want to be left alone. But the Pirate Lady needs to come with me, though.
Yeah, it's my only sense of grounding here. I also really loved that they do like throw in a little bit of humor into these situations, like the whole conversation she had with the pilots about how they're only there because she was weirded out that the random like person was flying a plane. I just love that the underlying tone of everyone knows everything at any given time, it shows its face a little bit here and there, is still funny, and I hope it maintains to be funny.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to. I think those moments of levity are really needed, because the source material is so grim that, you know, once Carol is chastising Zosia and the captains through talking through each other, because they all hear simultaneously.
So
it's like, okay, the AI is learning, right? It's growing and it's changing based on inputs, and the only inputs, or at least like a large percentage of them, are Carol being annoyed.
Yeah, I just love that though. Like it just, we know it's there, we know it's happening, but every time it comes forward, it just makes me laugh. And yeah, the hive mind is weird as hell, dude. It's so weird. Such a weird concept.
That's true. And they also help her because Carol, that is, asks to reach out to the one guy who they found after a little while, the one and only example of a guy who was perhaps not, is immune currently, but they didn't know of originally, the hive mind, that is. So there's something there. Carol talks to him on the phone. I don't speak Spanish, but it sounds like he was very mean to her and then hung up multiple times and then said some pretty straightforwardly bad shit to Carol. But I also think we're probably going to see that guy in the future and it will be fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I love that she called him back multiple times and then the last one was just to curse him out.
Yeah, just to let him know, like, you're not the only one who can yell in a language that I truly hope you don't understand, so you feel the way that I feel.
Yeah, and it's like the one line of Spanish she knows is like this cuss line. It's funny.
Carol then gets home, and Zoja gives her the mail that was arriving while she was away, the last mail from a foregone society. And one of the pieces of mail was a present that Helen got, a little massager, at which point, while the hive mind thinks that Carol's going to love this because it is a some sort of tribute to her past, Carol takes it as a further offense because obviously she does, and she just wants to be left alone. You know, at the same time, she went and got Zoja. Like, that is still in the back of perhaps her mind as much as it was mine, because she's complaining, wants to be left alone. Stop doing things based on knowledge that you had on just like a person who was in my house cleaning, or even worse, Helen, that I already told you not to bring up and take out of my life. But it's just so complicated because she wants to stop thinking about Helen herself. She's grieving. And at the same time, she's just like fighting for her life every second of every day, trying to figure out what that is now. And it might just be trying to disassociate as much as possible and watch as much Golden Girls as possible.
Yeah. Oh, I loved that she was watching Golden Girls over and over, just repeats of Golden Girls. But also, I don't want to gloss over this. It's so small, but I loved it so much when I saw it. I love the car that Zosha is driving. It's like a 70s Toyota Corolla, the blue car. Beautiful.
Yeah, maybe they're just choosing vehicles from her life and we aren't being told. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. It's either just the creators being like, I don't know, let's have some fun ones. And then,
yeah, I mean, that would actually be very cool little detail. Like, they're choosing cars that Carol remembers from her past, so it like makes her trust it a little bit more, kind of thing, like subconscious. I don't know. This is one of those shows that it very well could be that, but it very well could not be either. So.
Then they try to give her food because, again, they know what's in her fridge, which she then further freaks out about and goes to head to her local Sprouts, which, as I've learned recently, is a real place and not just made up.
Yeah, I love that name.
I thought it was just like a knockoff fake Whole Foods, but no, it's a real place.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah, I loved that name. I thought it was very cute and made me want to go there.
I will say, a lot of product placement in Pluribus.
Oh my God. Yeah. That was one of the complaints I saw on Reddit when I was reading up on the first two episodes was, man, you know, Barnes & Noble and Awkwafina are really, really paying up for this show.
Yeah, then Sprouts as well, and then DHL
DHL,
towards the end.
Yep.
But
I mean, it is what it is, man. It's Apple TV. They do their own product placement and a lot of stuff, so whatever, man.
Yeah, I mean, every show they make is product placement, you know what I mean? Capitalism.
It is like, you know, grounds it in reality. Like, if you recognize something, it's like, oh, this is happening in my hometown.
Right. They're not doing the Truman Show version of it where someone turns to camera. But
honestly, that would be funny.
It would. As Carol gets to Sprouts, she walks in and sees that all of the food is gone. This would then lead to sort of the tentpole scene in episode 3, or at least what I thought would be the tentpole scene in episode 3 as it was happening,
sure.
Where she calls and complains to Zosia that she just wants her Sprouts back. She wants to be left alone. She says she's an independent woman, but at the same time is asking for a hive mind to refill a grocery store, which is fun. And they say that they'll do it. And she says, okay, do I come back on like Friday or whatever? And they say, no, we'll be there in a second. And obviously diverted a ton of resources to both labor and bringing food and refill her Sprouts within like an hour and a half. And we get to watch a bunch of it.
Yeah, I loved that. And also something that I just thought of, every time Carol calls Zero, the operator, Zosia always picks up.
Correct.
But the operator is she like at a base station waiting for Carol to call? Like,
I mean, I think she's around the corner with a cell phone at all times.
And they just reprogram Zero to call her cell phone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they do. They have call forwarding in the hive mind.
Yeah, that's true.
And then we see another competency porn montage, basically, of just the most efficient way to fill a grocery store, again, in an hour and a half with the 18-wheelers.
Hundreds of people.
Yeah, the 18-wheelers come in one by one, and then the people just walk from all walks of life, from all around, to be laborers all of a sudden. And in this moment, as it's happening, I'm like, man, this is so cool. What an interesting idea that had to or was only born because a rando formula for... what we don't fully understand yet, but created a hive mind that murdered almost a billion people. But this cool grocery store scene is fun.
Yeah. The only thing I didn't like about this scene was when everyone was walking out past her and like trying to talk to her, a different person finished each line of the sentence. I actually
I didn't like that.
Yeah. I didn't like that.
It felt cheap and weird.
It did. It was cheesy and like a little too kitschy. I think it was a little off brand.
I agree. I didn't even think about it because it was one of those moments that happened so quickly that I think would have been, I would have just allowed to fall off my shoulders. But now that you bring it up, was the first time. No, it's okay. It was the first time that, you're right. The show felt like one of those moments where like, if you have twins in a show and they just start saying the same words at the same time, like, I don't know. It's just like the low hanging fruit of it all.
Yeah, it just felt a little, I don't know. I think they could have just had a random person say that one line and it would have been better. I mean, I don't even know if it would be better. I mean, it is what it is. It's such a small piece, like you said, but it was like the one time so far where I'm like, no, I don't like.
And then when she gets home and she's again watching Golden Girls and eating her food, the power goes out. She then goes outside to witness all of the power going out and then hers turning back on, Zosia calling her and apologizing for the inconvenience. But now as we are seeing live, her grocery store was empty and the power is cut. And then Zosia calls and says this is all for efficiency. They are consolidating. And the hive will restore anything she wants specifically, but they're moving in one direction. And while her happiness is the main mission, or at least they'll change the mission for it, or at least that's what like the voiceover is perhaps be lying to her or just be placating her. Mm. At the same time, they are working on their goals, you know?
Yeah, for sure. No, I appreciate that we are seeing kind of fallout from them making the world more efficient because they don't need to have all that power because the hive mind is like just paused essentially during the night. You know, there's no crime. Like they said, they don't have to have the streetlights on for crime. They don't have to have any of these places open for fear of people robbing things. You know, it's peace on earth, Ryan.
Pizza on earth?
Pizza on earth.
I love that. What would the pizza on earth be?
I mean, it would probably just be a cheese pizza, right? Like a cheese, maybe a cheese and, I don't even know, like a cheese and garlic? Is that too specific? I think that's too specific. It's a cheese pizza.
It's not nearly specific enough. It would be a margarita pizza.
Oh, okay. All right.
And then Zosha shows back up and is like, because after getting cursed out by Carol, who calls her, and they have the conversation about the lights going on and then off and then, or off and then on. And during that conversation, Carol offhandedly says, you know what would be really great? Just like giving me a stupid hand grenade. That would be amazing. At which point Zosha shows up with a hand grenade and Carol's like, you can't just be bringing me. Zosha's point is, You said.
You said you, this is, we're sorry this took so long. And, you know, but you asked for it, so
we
we're
assume
here
you're
to
being
deliver.
Sarcastic, but just in case.
Yeah, I love that too. They were like, we assumed the sarcasm, but just in case you weren't being sarcastic, we brought a real one.
At which point Carol invites Zosha in and they start drinking a little bit. At which point Zosha starts just like naming facts about things around her or what they're doing, like it is a AI getting prompts just based on what they see. So scary and weird. At which point Carol decides to disrupt that with a bit more yelling and then, you know, kind of accidentally taking apart the grenade that she didn't think was real, but oopsie daisy, as it turns out, it was real. And Zosha grabs it. This is the best moment of episode 3 when Zosha's like, may we? Thank you. And then takes the grenade and throws it out the window and gets almost fatally injured.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was a frag grenade. So a bunch of fragments exploded into her back, assumably. And, I mean, you saw the windows explode. I mean, it was a pretty big it's a hand grenade. So... You know.
Then Pirate Lady is in the hospital and dying, and Carol is there waiting for her like she's a person that she cares about, and again, waits for an update from the doctor. And the doctor comes out, but the doctor is everybody. So again, he is a DHL driver, a guy we haven't met before. By the way, this guy, who the actor is, I don't know his name, but he's wonderful. Really, really good.
Oh yeah, he was great. Really conveyed like the uncertainty, but they're so tied to her happiness and, well, not happiness, but her like fulfilling her wishes, that they were like, well, you know, we would do everything we could to convince you not, but at the end of the day, we would absolutely give you a nuclear bomb.
Right, which makes, I think, even clearer that how much power she has and also how big the threat is of the hive mind, that the other 10 people can ask for atom bombs too.
Yeah, and I really... So now that you're saying that out loud, I truly hope we don't get that situation where, like, well, we have atom bombs and now it's essentially like a... an instrument of deception, or not deception, you know what I'm trying to say, like a deterrent, an instrument for deterrent. I have the nukes, so do I.
Do you mean a nuclear deterrent?
Oh yeah, nuclear deterrent, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, like a thing that's alive and well
that's
and
real
in society today. Yeah,
yeah, everyone, like history repeats itself.
Mutually destroyed destruction, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope it
assured
doesn't...
destruction, not destroyed. I'm so dumb.
That's okay. You got there. But I'm so... Thanks, man. I really don't want that to be a thing. I hope they don't do something as on the nose as that. You don't want to ask for anything? Oh, I'm going to take all of the tanks in the world. Like, no, that's, I hate that.
You don't want it to be Oprah? Like, you get an atom bomb and you get an atom bomb.
Well, if we all can get atom bombs, you know. I don't like that. But I do like the thought now that we know this is their weak point. This is, you ask and you shall receive anything you want. Like, that's now real. Like, that, you know, we kind of, oh, it's funny. You could ask for, you know, a backhoe and a backhoe will be delivered. Oh, no. You can now truly ask for whatever you want. And they will do whatever, they will move mountains to make it happen.
At the same time, I think it again asks the question, what is this Hive's vibe? Because it's over time, it's seemingly more and more like a nihilistic utopia where they're doing all this consolidating, they're doing all these efficiency maneuvers, but at the same time, like the randos in the parking lot of the bowling alley in the Big Lebowski, if they had the power to and the dude asked, they would also give him an atom bomb. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because who gives a shit?
Yeah, whatever. We're going to take over the world anyway.
Yeah, it's just this complete lack of consequences no longer matter.
Yeah.
Because in a utopia society, everyone just assumes everyone has good intentions. At least the hive mind is acting like everyone has good intentions or should, or they just don't care about intentions. And if the earth explodes, so be it.
Well, you know, I don't know. I think they, it's like an elementary mind. While they're the smartest people in the world all together as one, they don't kill anything. Like eating chicken as food is not a thing anymore, right? They won't hurt anything. They will always serve in a positive way, and they will always give you everything that you want. So like, that sounds like utopia, but in practice, that could be detrimental on its own, right? Like, what happens when the food runs out? Like, and she tries to kill a cow to have a steak. Will the hive mind stop her from doing that?
I don't think so. I think they should be trying to grow vegetables in the background. They continue saying that it is their biological imperative to assimilate her. They wouldn't be doing efficiency maneuvers if not to have the long-term goal of survival. But at the same time, it is a nihilistic version of survival where, again, a rando could just be like, I would like you to shoot 8,000 Hellfire missiles at Antarctica. And they'd be like, okay, sounds like a good plan.
Sounds like a good plan. We'll see you there for the fucking cleanup.
It also speaks to the idea that it's not a virus. It's more so like the next step in evolution, according to whoever these goddang aliens are.
Sure.
And perhaps the next step of evolution is useful to them because, again, it just makes a whole planet be in weird limbo. But at the same time, I don't know. I look forward a lot to seeing future seasons of this, season 2 and season 3. Like, does the hive mind gain goals at some point that aren't just like efficiency maneuvers or things Carol asks them to do?
Yeah, like, what's the end game here? Like, they've hive-minded. What happens if, in the perfect hive-mind world, Carol and the other 11 succumb to the hive-mind? Like, what's the next thing that would happen? Is that
also
it? Like,
right. And even before that, when it's time to make them be in the hive-mind, and as Carol and Zosia were having a conversation, I have autonomy, I have free will right up until I don't. And Zosia says nothing. So the day comes, hive mindy times are happening. They come to get Carol. Carol resists. What do they actually do in that moment is going to be really interesting.
Yeah. Because they said you have your own free will until you don't. Well, she said until you don't. But they said, oh, you have your own free will, So like if she says no, even after hearing all the positives and good stuff about being a hive mind, like, will they turn aggressive? Like, I too am excited for the future seasons, because I want to know if we're actually going to see the aliens that were sending these messages to Earth. Like, I want to know if this show will branch out to that type of sci-fi, or if it's going to remain grounded in this kind of familiar, literal world that we live in.
I don't think we are. I think it's going to focus in a whole lot more on, like, the villain is within.
Sure.
Like, the hive minds is completely willing to placate your worst impulses, give you a grenade, give you a tank, give you a nuke at Carol's request. And then, you know, we're the hive mind at the same time trying for perfection, trying for, you know, boundless happiness. And can that all be happening where free will and agency and the value of a human being still exist? I think the answer is no. I think the answer is that's the way we're going. If not already there, you don't have free will. You didn't have it since 87. And and I know, the year I was born, I killed all free will. And at the same time, do I want to see the aliens? I don't know, a little bit, but I don't think I'm going to. And I think long term it will be better if I don't.
No, I kind of want to see them, or maybe not see them, but like have more interactions with them. Like maybe they send over a like a manifesto of like what the plans are, kind of thing. Like we get more from them. But yeah, I think that this is one of those weird sci-fi movies where it's sci-fi, but like we don't see the spaceships, which I don't know. I kind of want to see spaceships though, dude.
Yeah, I gotcha. It's a little bit of House of the Dragon when our main complaint was, where are the dragons?
Yeah, want more dragons.
But is that like basic as fuck?
A little, but like that's kind of like, you tell me that there's aliens sending us. You tell me there's aliens sending me messages. I want to see what the aliens look like.
Well, we talked about in the past, maybe they build a communicator as big as Africa to be able to talk to them, because
cool.
The hive mind becomes curious about their creators, if that's even a thing that they're capable of. But if that's the case, and we then actually get to hear a second message or a second, whatever the follow-up would be, whether it be broadcasting broadly and not specifically to Earth or otherwise, are we going to ever hear from them again? I don't know. I kind of don't want to.
So you would have four seasons of just humanitarian, you know, utopia versus individuality.
Yeah, just four seasons of like, you see, we are the worst.
Yeah, humans suck.
They really do, Adam. They're not cool. And I look forward to learning more and more about, you know, again, how I should feel about me when I look in the mirror. Like, you would get a freaking nuke, you dummy.
You could have a nuke, you know, you could if you want.
No, I definitely wouldn't get a nuke. I would be really, or maybe I'd be like, gather all the nukes, fire them into space. You know what I mean?
Now this is an interesting question. What would be like Ryan, like what would be your first request knowing this is now a thing you can do?
Especially in the case of like also meeting the other immune folks. If I came out of that meeting being like, they're all dumb, delusional dinks, then trying to protect myself long term. But also, what is long term? I'm also being told that I'm going to be put into the hive mind in like 3 to 9 months.
Yeah.
So I guess my overall goal would be to not get hive minded. So the only way I could do that, I would start saying things like, immediately either fly me to the most secure place on Earth or start building one for me where I'm standing. And then also make it so you guys definitely can't get in and out. Also make it so that it's underneath the ground so much that you guys can't, like, you could try to do missiles, but they won't even work. Then, no, okay, let's go back to the beginning. Shoot all the nukes into the sky, or the moon. Fuck it. Blow the moon up. And then we don't even need tides. Efficiency. And
yeah, the moon blowing up would probably be the worst thing you could do.
Okay, and then I look back and I'm like, sure, the moon thing was a bit much. I'll admit, shouldn't have blown up the moon.
But I think we learned something today.
But also, I brought back beef jerky. Like, pros and cons.
Yeah. Now, what are your thoughts on the internet as I wouldn't say as a whole, but generally, I have been seeing a lot of people post about how they don't like that Carol is so negative, how she is such an unlikable character. What would you say to that?
Fuck them. And this is why. Are you out of your goddamn mind? Was she so negative? 800 million people just died, including the love of her life, her entire life, by the way, that is gone, stripped from her against her will, as was everybody else's on Earth. But efficiencies and world peace, and we can turn the lights off at night. And isn't this utopia perhaps the way we should be going? Like, no, absolutely not.
Tell me how you really feel.
This is exactly how I feel. I am being taxed by the hive mind without representation, and I shall revolt.
Yeah, yeah. I felt the same way. Like, you put yourself in that situation and tell me that you would not be absolutely miserable and frustrated and lashing out. Like, I don't know. People are saying that she's an unlikable character. I don't want to keep watching this show. It's miserable. I'm like, that's the whole freaking point of it.
It would be insane if she wasn't miserable. In fact, it's insane that the other ones aren't miserable. Are miserable, you soft blanket dink babies. Like, I... Oh, this pisses me off, dude.
Yeah, I don't know. They're saying it more from like a writing perspective. Like, why couldn't she be a more likable character, written a more likable character? But the whole marketing of this show was she is the most miserable person on Earth trying to save the Earth from happiness. Like,
right.
That's the whole tagline.
Right, so like what you want is another show, and that's not this show, so go watch another show, buddy.
Exactly. Or just like don't watch this one and just leave it for people who care to watch it.
That's the worst criticism of a show, man. You know what I wish it was? Completely different.
I wish it wasn't exactly as it was written.
Just make it 100% different. Would that be better for me if everything was the way that I wanted it?
Ugh,
you're the
annoying
fucking asshole that would have, you know, I'm getting heated.
it's like I'm millennial gray, dude. It's millennial gray.
Millennial gray with a side of a drone strike. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, sure.
Like, you're so boring, and at the same time, somehow in the parking lot of the house or the fortress that someone told you to build, I don't know if it was Ryan or not, but you have all the drones with all the missiles in the front yard, be like, okay, now bring all the rest of the machinery. You know what? Like Carol said, bring on the tanks.
Yeah, bring on give me all of the tanks, give me all of the guns.
And let's go to Colombia or Peru or wherever the heck that guy was. I want to go meet that mean man.
Yeah, I want to meet the mean, or Peru or Venezuela. Well, she spoke Spanish, so I don't know.
Yeah, that doesn't help me at all. I don't know enough about...
There's so many Spanish-speaking countries.
Right, yeah, just a lot of, so many of them. Anyway, if you want to learn how to speak Spanish, download... No, nobody paid us to say that. Go find us.
We can't do that.
More on the internet. There are a lot of ways to find us on the internet, and Adam is specifically going to go over them in a listicle kind of fashion.
A listicle kind of fashion. Well, yes, you can find us on the internet in many different places. And one of the best places to find us on is our Patreon at patreon.com/HBOBOIZ. For $1 or more a month, you get all of these episodes early, ad-free, and you get some Patreon exclusives peppered in here and there. And you also get your name read out at the end of every episode. So we'd like to thank our current patrons, Connor O'Dowd, Jamie Lochner, Jurassic World Afterbirth, I Miss James, Brent Ginn, Craig, John Jewers, Major Woody, Butter Nichols, Susan, Buffalo Pizzle, Seafritz, and Pumpkin Season 4. And thank you, Brent Ginn and Butter Nichols, for being our $5 a month tier patron. We appreciate you and all of you, as we always do. Please also find us on our socials at the HBO Boys Pod or the HBO Boys Podcast on Threads, Instagram, TikTok. Get at me. Like, comment, subscribe. Interact with me on Threads. It's a very cool spot. Tons of people talking about the plurbs right now. Tons of people talking about new shows coming out on there. A lot of TV and movie fans over there that I interact with. And you can too. So I'm so excited, dude. I'm so excited for the show to keep going. I love shows like this. It's funny. It's weird. It's mysterious. And it's one that my girlfriend would actually watch with me because she normally doesn't like shows like this. So,
right. Yeah. This is, will actually, turn ahead as opposed to, The American Revolution by Ken Burns, which is just an immediate snooze fest for everyone who's not me, but I swear to God, it's the best thing on television right now, except for the plurbs.
Yeah, no, I absolutely will be watching that. That will be something I'll be watching on my own, sadly, but I will be watching it. Love me, American History. And then we're also going to be watching Fallout coming up soon. So that's another one to look forward to.
100%. Yeah, I mean, video game adaptions are doing well these days. Twisted Metal just got a third season order today.
I love that. That show's so fun.
They're blasting out Fallout seasons, even when they have two of the biggest stars in Ella Purnell and Walton Goggins on that cast. I mean, there's a lot of good TV coming up. And, of course, Stranger Things coming here in like 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I have to watch the rest of it. I haven't watched any of that.
Stranger Things?
Yeah.
How much have you watched?
I've watched like the first like 4 episodes, and then I just kind of trailed off for some reason.
Of season 1?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, man.
I understand. If I were you, for real,
yeah,
I would watch the first season, I would watch the second season, and then I would watch a recap of the third and fourth season, and then watch the fifth.
Okay. That seems a lot more digestible. So
what's the order? Like, is it the machete order of the Star Wars movies that people do sometimes?
Yeah, it's like pretty much skip episode 1. You know? Right. Like, you don't even watch episode 1.
You don't watch episode 1. You sort of get everything you need in episode 2 that episode 1 would give you. The version of that for Stranger Things is don't even bother with seasons 3 and 4. They're fine, but honestly, a YouTube video will do. And just get right to the good shit.
Yeah, episode 1 had some of the best scenes in the whole saga, but the movie itself was terrible. Also, another thing that they announced, Nintendo announced, was the screenshots of the Legend of Zelda movie, which I am terrified for, absolutely terrified, and incredibly nervous for. The Legend of Zelda, I'm a super fan. It is my favorite IP ever made, ever, across everything, and Of course, I'm going to watch this movie, and I'm so afraid it's going to be dog shit because it's not. It should have been an animated movie, and I have so many feelings. I think that the actress they chose to play these characters look great. I think the aesthetic looks great, but I think that's about all we're going to get. I'm just so nervous about how they're going to do the story. I'm so nervous about how they're going to portray Link.
If Link says one word, I riot.
If he says anything but ha, yeah, shit, like that's sad. The only other thing that I will accept is if he says, "Excuse me, princess."
Princess, yeah.
Other than that, terrified of that coming out.
Oh well, I guess we can hope for the best. And as long as we don't live in a world where everyone gets a tank and never the lights get shut off before that we see the Legends of Zelda movie, then we're all going to be fine.
Oh, I'm so scared, Ryan. I'm scared.
I'm so scared. Where's that from?
I'm so startled.
That can't be it.
Some South Park. I'm so startled right now.
I'm not. I'm fine.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.